las mariposas. The monarch butterflies. Millions of them. They fly from America to the Mexican mountains every fall. And if you look up to the sky, it's like looking at beautiful orange and black angels hovering over your head, arguing about who to bless. Then in the summers, they're gone, back to America. It's silly, I know. But I used to imagine a little girl in Boston or in New York, looking at my butterflies and smiling. I tried to picture them when Miguel was raping me.
What did you see?
Nothing. It was the cold, dark sky. The moon, it was full. It was like a perfectly round circle cut out of a sheet of blackness.
What was on the other side of that sheet? Who's gonna change my bag?
City, sexually based offenses are considered especially heinous. These are their stories.
Last week on Munch by Benson, we watched a full 45-minute long cold open for today's episode, which featured, among other things, a lack of knowledge of how phones work, a lack of knowledge of how laws work, and a lack of knowledge of how au pairs work. Longtime nanny Lourdes Vega takes Miguel Lopez hostage. She is convinced that he raped her repeatedly and murdered her two friends during her trip to the United States back in 5 years ago. SVU finds out about the kidnapping in improbable fashion, and Lieutenant Benson gets herself kidnapped by the enraged Lourdes. Using her magical powers of empathy, Benson manages to defuse the situation and take both Lourdes and Lopez into custody. But why is Miguel being treated like a criminal when it's not remotely clear that he was the person Lourdes claimed had attacked her? Find out on today's thrilling conclusion. So yeah, guys, just wanted to fill you in. This is a second part of a two-parter. Of course, my name is Adam. I am up here in New York City. I'm joined along by Josh. So how's it going, Josh?
I feel like it'll be going a lot better. Once I've got this episode behind me.
Spoiler, guys, we finished talking about last week's episode about 3.5 minutes ago, so
indeed,
so it's fresh to us still.
Have you been watching anything good that we can talk about since
you know, I've been watching a little bit of Party Down season 2.
Nice.
which season 2 really depresses me profoundly, because I think season 1, you kind of have this hope that that things are going to work out for our hero Henry, and then in season 2 you're like, oh fuck, man.
It does end with just that little nugget of hope, though.
Yeah, I'm not there yet, but at this point, like, I think I just saw the orgy episode, which is like one of the funniest things ever put on television.
I love that episode so much. It's so good.
So good.
Fucking Megan Mullally in that episode just keeps trying to get with fucking Tom Lennon's character. Uh-huh. And
fantastic.
Damn it, it's brilliant. Yeah. I fucking love that show. I've seen every episode like probably 12 times.
And what's his name? I'm totally blanking his name, but the pretty boy guy.
Ryan Hansen.
Ryan Hansen gets shot down by the girl.
Yeah.
Just in the best
it's
possible.
Amazing.
She's
it's
like,
so great.
I'm sorry, I really don't want to shoot the shit about careers right now, because I'm standing fucking naked holding condoms in the loop.
It's such a, God damn it, it's such a good episode. I can't tell you how much I love that fucking show.
It's a great show. Of course, Josh and I both worked in catering and catering adjacent businesses, probably for a lot longer than either of us planned on working them. So we definitely empathize with the characters.
I was at the Vulture Party Down thing, the panel from.
Oh yeah,
two,
yeah, yeah,
yeah. So that's sort of the thing that got them talking about a reunion in the first place. So fingers crossed that that's still happening post COVID.
Yeah.
But yeah, pretty jonesed for that, or pretty jet.
Jazz.
I'm really jacked off. I'm really jacked off about that.
Would you say? And so everything that used to be okay is getting worse, including this episode of Law and Order SVU that we had to watch, which was Remember Me 2, the finale of Remember Me, and the finale of season 19.
Indeed.
And I guess, unless you got some other banter.
This is Chernuchin putting his stamp on season 19.
He sure is. So, Josh, can I just rip off the Band-Aid and
fuck it,
get this fucker over with? Okay, I'm going to take a sip of my beer. What you drinking, Josh, before we dive in?
Well, last episode I had a hazy IPA from Brewing Project. That was pretty good. Yeah. And now I'm drinking a fucking Lone Star. Both of these are full pints because fuck this episode.
Yeah, so I'm drinking a Bengali from Six Point Brewing. It's
nice, that's a good one.
Yeah, it's a real good one. It's their IPA, I believe. Yeah, it's their IPA. It's
one
their,
like, would hope, given the name.
Yeah, it's their like standard IPA, because they have like several different IPAs. But yeah, I'm enjoying that one. Megan does not care. They have it in slim cans, so it's for those of you unfamiliar with slim cans, I'm sure you've seen a Michelob Ultra before. It is in a Michelob Ultra-sized can, which to me doesn't matter, but my wife does not care for that.
It matters if your fridge is, if the shelves are very specifically set for a certain can level.
I can see that, yeah.
It really does.
No, I can definitely see that. And like, I used to have a can crusher, I love that can crusher, but you try to stick a tall boy in that can crusher and you're like dealing with a world of pain, basically, and you're probably getting beer spilled on you, et cetera.
You might die.
Eventually, you might get like botulism, a cut, and get some botulism in there, something like that. All right.
This episode.
Let's talk about this episode. Lieutenant Olivia Benson believes women. Always. And despite a complete and utter lack of probable cause, she's decided that Miguel Lopez, the pretty boy from last week's hour-long cold open, was a dangerous, bloodthirsty coyote. So he's being taken into custody, and since, again, without any evidence, he must be part of a large and ruthless criminal enterprise, that means that little shit baby boy Doe's life is probably in danger now. If you're having trouble figuring out how or why we got to this point, watching the previous hour of SVU, which we covered last week, will not be of any help whatsoever.
Not at all. Baffling.
Who's going to change my bag?
At the hospital. I'm sorry.
fuck.
At the hospital, Miguel is sticking to his story that he's a web designer from Portland and a victim of a mistaken identity when his lawyer shows up and tells him to stop talking. At the precinct interview room, you know ADA Stone means business since his shirt is buttoned up and his tie is on. He and Rollins are interviewing Lourdes about the group she fears will hunt her down if she's deported. She tells them that she ran into Miguel by accident and that she could never walk away from what he'd done to her. Thankfully for Lourdes, the family she works for, the Buckleys, are on their way back from Connecticut with a fancy defense lawyer in tow. Carisi's research on Lopez seems to corroborate his story, much to Liv's chagrin, and Liv receives word that the owner of the apartment, Jorge Diaz, died from his head wounds at the hospital, which means that Lourdes will be tried and almost certainly convicted of at least manslaughter unless Benson can pull some magical shit out of her ass. Lourdes' attorney, Santino Rojas, requests that she be placed in protective custody. But of course, Stone can't readily agree to that since there is no active investigation involving the vast, shadowy cartel network which supposedly threatens her life. As such, Stone is not especially pleased with Lieutenant Benson, who is still convinced that everything Lourdes has said is true. Apparently, someone off-screen threatened to skin Lourdes alive, which prompts Stone to I mean, I'm sorry, but like, when did that
How
happen?
How the fuck do we never see that? What the fuck?
I'm sorry.
Sorry.
Yeah. Which prompts Stone to request protective custody for Lourdes. Stone also informs us that he's dropping the charges against Lopez. What charges? We haven't got the foggiest idea. Rollins helps Lourdes move into a hotel in Jersey, and Finn and Carisi go talk to her employers, the Buckleys. They were very fond of Lourdes, but never heard anything about her past life in Mexico or the trauma of her journey to the United States. A photo of Lourdes with two other nannies leads Carisi and Benson to Maria, who'd been trafficked along with Lourdes. Though she's reluctant to help, Maria clearly recognizes a photo of Miguel Lopez. We know this solely because of the music fill in the background. Maria then states that even though she knows Lourdes and Estella and Lucita, she's never seen Lopez in her life. Does this latest turn of events dissuade Benson? Not even close. Stone obviously refuses to drop the extremely serious charges against Lourdes and is informed that she will be pursuing an insanity defense, which, and I'll admit I was typing while I watched this part, upset Benson for reasons that I don't quite understand. Next, Lourdes is crying about butterflies or some shit whilst talking to one of the longest running characters in the Law and Order.
Yep.
Sorry.
It's crazy.
Next, Lourdes is crying about butterflies or some shit whilst talking to one of the longest running characters in the Law and Order universe, Dr. Elizabeth Olivet. Olivet tells the court that Lourdes was suffering from PTSD. Attorney Rojas then cross-examines Miguel and attempts to use Miguel's lifelong fibs about his immigration status as proof that he's a liar and thus probably a rapist too. Later at a bar, Liv and Stone have an Sorry, just remembering all this shit and now it doesn't make any sense.
No, it sure doesn't.
Later at a bar, Liv and Stone have an incomprehensible conversation about justice for rape victims before Liv storms off to care for Noah. Then, sorry.
It's just nonsense. Like, every scene just happens with no regard for what happened before it.
Then, a dapper bald man introduces himself to Stone as Jorge Diaz's brother Diego and starts making veiled threats against Stone's family. He wants Lourdes deported so that, quote, our justice system in Mexico will take over. Liv's total bullshit eventually forces Stone to treat her as a hostile witness at trial. But because he doesn't want to get pulled from the case by Boss McCoy, Stone enlists SVU to help protect him from the cartel bad boys who are coming after him and his family. Not having a well-thought-out plot for this episode, Lourdes is put back on the stand to cry some more, before Stone and Liv argue some more about the nature of objective reality, when Stone receives a phone call from Finn that his sister has been kidnapped by a professional cartel extraction squad. Back in Jersey, Rollins is getting fed up with Lourdes' bullshit, and after a few heated words, probably oversteps her authority and convinces her to agree to a plea agreement to which Rojas has no input. Back at the station, Benson and Stone threaten Miguel that they'll tell the cartel just how helpful he's been to them, which would certainly mean a painful death is in the cards for him. Finally, and despite never having charged him with any crime that we know of, Miguel is set free, but his fear of retribution gets him talking. He says that his inability to find a good computer programming job after college at Gonzaga led immediately to driving a rape truck across an international border. His mood gets mega real quick as he opens up about his crimes, but he does give them the address of a warehouse he used to deliver women to where Stone's sister is likely being held. When SVU arrives, SWAT is already preparing to bust down the door, and while several girls are free, Sister Stone is taken hostage by a cornered Diego Diaz. When she sees her brother, she just starts running towards him, and predictably, Diego shoots her about 25 times in the back with his automatic weapon, and is in turn gunned down himself after about 1,500 shots are fired, and several explosions take place as well. Lourdes is going into federal witness protection program at this point. Miguel's assistance wraps up a massive decentralized criminal organization instantaneously off-screen, and Stone is forced to reckon with emotions that were not programmed into his original positronic matrix circuitry. And we are left with a I've said it before, but holy shit, how did SVU survive Michael Chernuchin? Wow. Dick Wolf.
A lot of people won't get no supper tonight. A lot of people going to suffer tonight. Cause the battle is getting hotter in this iration. It's Armageddon.
Oh, God.
Oh, wow. I feel like my reading of that recap was unprofessional, but...
So was this episode.
Jesus Christ. Again, we discussed at the end of last week's episode, they spent millions of dollars producing this episode. And
this had many more locations.
Tons.
Like, all of the money that was saved in the locations from the first episode were put towards this one. So this one actually cost more.
There were lots of locations. They were traveling all over the place. There were buildings they don't normally go to.
This one even had a bigger guest star that they had to pay. So.
They had multiple bigger guest stars.
Yeah.
So,
speaking of which.
Yeah, I guess that's the logical starting point for our discussion.
So, this installment of SVU featured Benito Martinez,
yeah,
playing defense attorney Santino Rojas. He was born in Albuquerque and went to Hollywood High School Performing Arts Center with Anthony Anderson, who at some point will pop up in the show.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then after graduating high school, he studied at the London Academy of Music and Dramatic Art, which I would never have guessed.
Hmm.
But, you know, it's a real place.
Yeah.
Big deal. You may have seen him in the films Outbreak, mm-hmm, Saw, Million Dollar Baby, Beyond the Lights, American Made, and Queen and Slim. Mm. He was, as Adam Shirley wants me to say, main cast in The Shield, where he played David Acevedo.
Let's say that he is probably, if you've ever seen a previously on segment of any show,
He's got the least desirable previously on clip that they would ever play.
And definitely the most memorable, and B, the most replayed. Like, we saw that clip maybe 100 times.
It feels like
over the course of The Shield.
Sure feels like it.
Previously on The Shield.
You went off the grid today.
Who told you that?
Today was a one-time thing. Got it.
Got it.
On your knees, man.
Let's see that mouth. Suck it!
Yeah, he was David Acevedo, who was the lieutenant. Was he started as a captain?
He's a captain.
He started as a captain. Eventually, he's running for mayor and is one of the, you know, the inner circle main characters of The Shield.
Yep. And early on, he is very centrally Vic Mackey's foil.
Yes, exactly.
He's also the sheriff in 13 Reasons Why, and he's been in all three seasons of American Crime, which is an anthology, so he's played different characters in each one, but at least two of the seasons he's main cast in. He also had recurring roles in Sons of Anarchy, Supernatural, House of Cards, The Blacklist, How to Get Away with Murder, and 911 Lone Star. Moving past him, we've got Roberto Sanz Sanchez,
mm-hmm,
who's playing Diego Diaz. He had a fairly big part in Too Fast, Too Furious, which he booked. I believe he was working as a... He basically booked it, I believe, because he cussed out John Singleton while John Singleton was being an asshole somewhere.
Yeah, I have to say that might be my least favorite film of the series.
It's
and
easily
it's
the worst.
Got the best name, but yeah.
It's the worst. Yeah. I've seen all of them.
Yeah.
I cherish the other nine movies of the franchise.
Are there 10 of them now?
Well, 9 and then Hobbs and Shaw.
Okay, yeah, absolutely.
All right. And then Roberto Sanchez was also in two episodes of Law and Order LA, which I believe makes him the second person we've talked about who's been in Law and Order LA.
Yeah.
He also had recurring parts in Should I and The Family Business.
I'm still hoping that Skeet Ulrich will have a guest appearance in SVU, but not holding my breath.
I feel like he does, or maybe it's just that Marishka is in
LA.
An episode of LA.
Mm.
Because I know there's a scene. I remember a scene with Skeet and SVU cast. So
now, speaking of the cast of other Law and Order series, Carolyn McCormick is probably the next person we should talk about. Who
absolutely
fans of the original series will remember going way back.
Yeah. She's in 87 episodes of the original series.
Yeah.
As Dr. Elizabeth Olivet, who she is playing again here.
Yeah.
She's reprising the role that she played there in one episode of Criminal Intent, one episode of Trial by Jury, and one episode of New York Undercover.
See, I would posit that Olivet character is the sort of genesis, the seed that eventually grew into SVU, right? Because she was the first psychiatrist that they had in the show. And they started probing kind of different storylines once they started using her character. Like I think the Chris Noth character is having to deal with the death of George DeZunda. And so they're like probing these kind of psychological depths that didn't happen when it was a very like by the numbers, but high level intelligent, procedural. And sure. I think that it wasn't direct line, but I think that eventually grew into making a series that is more about the psychology than the reality, so to speak.
I guess maybe depending on who you asked, maybe not flowered, but metastasized.
Yeah.
But in the best possible way.
I've always liked her character. I've always thought she was a pretty good actress.
Now she was born in Midland, Texas, and went to high school in Houston. She graduated with honors from Williams College. Mm. She's won a Drama Desk Award and done a ton of stage work, much of which happened with her husband, actor Byron Jennings. Her first role was in Enemy Mine. Mm. Which, if you've not seen, you absolutely should.
No.
That movie's really something.
Oh, it looks awesome.
It's a fucking weird one. she was also main cast in season 2 of Spencer for Hire, and she was main cast in Cracker, which was later titled Cracker Mind Over Murder, featuring Robert Pastorelli. So, and then last actor I've got is Brian Keene. This is his fourth character in 6 episodes of SVU. Mm-hmm. He actually played a different doctor in Consent, which means both his character and Alan Buckley are played by actors who play different characters in the same episode that we covered back in Munch My Benson episode 11. This might be the rapiest bar in New York City.
Nice.
All I've got.
I don't think was there anybody else.
Brian Keene is playing the doctor at Pamela's institution.
Yeah, I don't think there's anybody else really of note that was only in this episode. So
right, and I'm not going to fucking talk about anyone we already talked
about.
No,
we already talked about all those fucking people. Yeah. Who cares? So
I didn't even care then.
No, no. So, Josh.
All right, notes.
So first off, I don't remember. I'm just going to go with the kind of the addresses first. We'll talk about a couple location notes, sure. And then we'll jump into the whole thing. So a few places are thrown around. For one, when Lourdes does her teary, her weepy rant about butterflies, she does mention a real place in the mountains outside of Mexico City called Tenancingo, where that's actually, I think Maria might mention that. But that's where
I believe it's Maria.
But the monarch butterflies do migrate there, and it's a lovely event that is threatened by various human caused problems. But
wait, humans are fucking shit up?
Yeah, apparently
with nature.
That's what they tell me. Now, when we talked about the Buckleys, and they were going to Connecticut. In my mind, the trip they were going on was a long trip, right? It seemed like they were packing up the family and leaving for the whole weekend. It's going to take them a while to get back. And they get a phone call that they're on their way back. It's a fucking half-hour drive to get from Greenwich to New York. It's not. It's a suburb. People commute from there. It's an hour by train. It's not.
Yeah, I mean, you'd take the train if you lived in Greenwich. You wouldn't drive.
I think that these...
Unless you had a driver. If you had a driver, maybe. But...
So, this is a segue into... I think the Buckleys can afford to park their car in New York City because we see what their address is. Their address is 1070 Fifth Avenue, New York, New York. Now, Josh, this just so happens to be a rather famous address. In fact, it's a building that probably doesn't have any residents living in it, because that is the Solomon R. Guggenheim Museum, which is a nice. Probably the most single distinctive building. Actually, no, we had the Flatiron Building used as somebody's personal address once.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
But I could see you like living in an office.
That was a former governor, though.
Yeah,
that was a former governor of New York lived in the Flatiron Building.
I don't think anybody lives in the Guggenheim. but yeah,
maybe they live in the basement, I don't know,
but yeah, Megan gets to walk by it going to work. It definitely stands out. There's nothing else around it that is like that building.
Nope.
Yeah,
not at all.
So yeah, those are our addresses for this week. So I guess let's get into the other bullshit.
Yeah. So Liv thinks Noah needs to be under protective order immediately without cause. The amount of taxpayer dollars
that
spent
on this fucking
on
kid
is so insulting. We've got to be talking in the millions at this point. Millions of dollars spent of your money, Adam, of your money.
Yeah.
And Sean's money and Christina's money.
Uh-huh.
And John's money and Maya's money.
They don't those people don't pay taxes.
Yeah, they're not gonna pay taxes. But,
yeah, it's just shocking. They've gone to New Hampshire for this fucking kid. They've had massive police manhunts for this fucking kid. I'm forgetting the ones in the other seasons just because the image of Brooke Shields, you know, like rictus as she's like pretending to smile at Noah is searing into my brain when I think about that child. At least we didn't have to hear him speak in the second half of this episode of this two-parter. So that was a kind of benefit to us.
So the phone app untraceable video feed is like kind of the only damning thing they've got on Miguel, especially once it's just like, oh, they were painting my apartment. That's why I was at this other apartment. Once that's established, which doesn't get established until this episode, it's really like the only damning thing they've got.
It's a pretty thin thread.
Other than her ID, which seems very
under duress,
very conceivably that she has, you know, just made some rando. Like, from the first episode, there's no groundwork laying to make us actually believe, other than Liv's just instincts. There's no credible thing.
An interesting plot could have been a mistaken identity situation, right? Where we have two people that are victims and we're dealing with the fact that both of them are actually victims. But no.
Yeah, that would have been interesting.
Liv just, for some reason, she goes from not believing Lourdes or trying to defuse Lourdes' situation to being like, no, that guy's the fucking devil and he needs to burn and I'm going to break every law I can to
and
make it happen.
There is nothing he does in the room to make her think that.
Never.
Like, it's fucking baffling. Okay, so then the lawyer shows up super fast for Miguel and that's the first moment where it's like, okay, something's probably up here, and maybe it's just like the hinky shit he was into with a deep web feed, you know, like, but someone's covering his ass here.
Yeah, so exactly. Until the, I mean, again, we're kind of giving this episode maybe too much credit, but when the lawyer shows up, it's the first time I'm like, oh, well, I know that because Liv said that he's the bad guy, we have to believe that he's the bad guy, but now I actually might agree too.
Yeah. So then Finn tells Liv that he's taking her home and there's nothing she can do about it. So of course she gets a phone call and ignores what clearly needs to happen. She needs to get some fucking sleep because she is fucking nuts in this episode. This is also Finn's second episode as sergeant. I mean, he was made sergeant in 22. Mm. And then there was that whole episode is sort of like hanging in the air whether or not he's leaving the unit, because technically as sergeant you're supposed to leave the unit, but
yeah,
they were basically like filled up, and so he doesn't need to go anywhere.
Yeah, and you know.
But she really should have listened to him, because her fucking police work... Because this is the episode that it's really like, oh no, this is Liv actually doing police work, and it's abysmal from front to back.
Yeah, it's bad. It's not good. She should not be on the street. Like, they should take her badge and gun.
Oh, absolutely. Like, the first time through watching this, like, Carisi is also like, are you sure, like, are you really sure that this couldn't just be a mistaken identity? And she seems to, like, not really be willing to even entertain that notion.
Yeah.
It's like, it sure seems at this point that there's a strong fucking possibility that Miguel's not the guy.
No, and she has this conversation because they're talking about Maria, right? Because I think it's when they're having this conversation, and he's like, well, it seems like it's probably a mistaken identity case. And she says, well, more likely Maria's terrified of these cartels like Lourdes is. And it's like, so the most likely explanation is that a vast international gang of criminals is going to murder her if she doesn't say anything.
Yeah.
That's Occam's razor for SVU season 19.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And like, okay, so we obviously... Like, we know Miguel's the guy now.
Well, at this point, as soon as, like, they take him
in. Well, like, now that we've, like, recapped the entire episode, we know he's the guy. But the only way that he can be is because the character of Miguel makes no sense. It's nothing that Liv has done here.
Yeah.
Nothing that she's, like, discerned from anything. Like, he's very convincing.
But also, it's not like... So, and we're going back to what we were talking about last week.
And he's only convincing because he doesn't make sense.
But it's not like he's picking up Lourdes to try to, like, re-traumatize her. Like, he's some sort of, like mastermind sadist.
Trust me, got a lot of questions about that coming in the notes, but...
Yeah. I mean, he just kind of flips back and forth from being, like, the guy he says he is. That's the guy who went to Gonzaga and lived in Portland doing web design for, whatever, six years. And... being a, yes, I raped and murdered those women, but because, what was his name? Diaz? What was his first name? Jorge? That Jorge?
Yeah, Jorge.
Because Jorge Diaz just called me on the phone. So I changed from being a normal guy to being a sadistic murderer.
Sure. Yeah. as one does. Yeah. All right. So then Jorge Diaz dies and Lourdes is fucked.
Of course, we never really like hear an update on his condition. We're not like thinking that he might die. The only update we see on his condition...
I was assuming that he was going to die. I mean, she brained him with that fucking trophy.
Well, she brained him. She did. And then she just throws him in like a closet and he's just laying there bleeding.
Well, no, she has Liv both Montero and him into the bathroom and close the door.
That's right.
Now, Stone says, do you have any evidence... or something to the effect of, do you have any evidence he's the trafficker? And Liv says, not yet, but I will. And it's like...
I'm not sure that's how probable cause works.
No. And we know that she does no fucking police work in this episode. And a body dropped here. Like, having been raped doesn't mean you have carte blanche. And Jackie was really pissed about this.
Yeah.
Having been raped doesn't mean you have carte blanche to straight up bludgeon someone to death.
No.
You know? Like, it's... God damn it. Just...
No, but in the moral universe of the show, it does, right? Like, in Liv's brain, it sure does, at the bar. Killed that guy. Yeah, it's okay
she's fine. She's fine with it. No, you got to get your fucking justice or whatever the fuck she says.
She said something about moral justice. Unbelievable.
So, going back to the Buckleys, because they go back to the Buckleys, and... she never bothered to ask Lourdes anything about her life in 5 years working for them.
Yeah.
5 fucking years.
Well, and they feel bad about it, though. At this point, they feel bad about it because she's not going to be working for them anymore. But
that's some white guilt there.
Yeah. Sure that is.
Deserved white guilt.
Now, again, I interact with the nanny community quite a bit, you know, being dad pushing around a stroller at times or walking with a cute little kid. Lourdes is not. There's a lot of kinds of nannies, but they don't look like her.
Well, I would posit there that there probably are times where nannies look like her, but that's for a different reason, and it's, you know, the husband got to choose the nanny with untoward themes. Now, Maria won't spill, and that's kind of the first time where it seems like Miguel might not have been a case of mistaken identity. Like, you know, between that and the lawyer showing up real fast, it's like, okay, now it really feels like he probably did it.
But again,
they haven't done any police work to prove this, to lay the groundwork.
But Maria doesn't tell them anything. She there's maybe a glimmer in her eyes.
Yeah, hesitancy.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
Which is only if you didn't have that fill, that orchestral fill, you would have not have noticed.
Sure. Now, if this is the cartel's hustle, it seems like a weird hustle. Trafficking nannies?
Well, that's the other
thing. And or hidden camera shit broadcast on the dark net with bad camera angles with girls that are picked up at clubs. Like if it's snuff films or something like that, it might make sense. But even that seems like a leap for that neighborhood. Like, those would have to be really thick walls. Then the trafficking nannies where's the fucking money if you're just finding people on Craigslist to set these nannies up with?
Well, okay, so yeah, first off, your snuff film angle, right? What's the margin on a snuff film? It doesn't seem like it's that great, right? It doesn't seem like it's the sort of thing that's sustaining a massive international organization, right? Maybe like
no.
A few scumbags in a basement somewhere are doing this.
Yeah.
For them, it's like, sure, human trafficking's a big thing, but it's
not for nannies, for sex work.
Yes, for sex work, for fucking agricultural slave labor in Florida.
Yeah, for
or
labor,
something.
For slave. Yeah, 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 absolutely. Not for picking fucking tomatoes or oranges in Florida. Not for fucking nannies on the Upper West Side or whatever.
And nannies is like an above board operation. And also that you have to think about what do coyotes do, right? They shepherd people through the lawless kind of interior of northern Mexico. Yep. If they'd done a little bit of research, you realize that most of the people that engage these services are not Mexicans, because they can actually get through Mexico. They have papers.
Yeah.
What is the coyote doing for a Mexican? I don't know, throwing them over the river? You can wade across it in places. I've done it. I've swum halfway across the fucking river.
Sure. I've got stopped by Border Patrol in the middle of the Rio Grande.
Yeah.
In Bend.
And it's like, it's not a big, I mean, so.
Thankfully I was white.
Yeah. But it's like one of those do a little bit of research. Like they exist, and they're oftentimes terrible people, but they exist as a service for people that need them, not for people that have legitimate paperwork to get, you know, halfway there. And then
surely not for fucking nannies.
Not for nannies, because
there's no goddamn angle for them to get a real amount of money from this. Doesn't make sense.
You get what's the kickback on a nanny job?
And she lives with them, clearly. This isn't a situation where she's coming back to a fucking place and having to give a bunch of her paycheck.
Well, it's not like the East Side.
Because if she were having to give the money, then he would fucking recognize her.
It's not like the East Side slave market either. This chick is not a slave to these people. She has a normal job. Uh-huh.
Yeah, they let her go out and get her fuck on at the club.
Yes, they encourage it. They told her that she was hot.
Yeah, they're like, oh yeah, go get some, girl.
Yeah.
It's fucking baffling.
And also hire nannies, right? They're parents with money. Parents with money don't want to be dealing with Mexican drug cartel members, right? They don't want to call the fucking Sinaloa gang and be like, hey, can you get me a hot young nanny by Wednesday? That's not...
And three bricks of heroin.
Yeah, right? That's not how this works. Now, if she had been kept as their sex slave, if it was fucking Andrew McCarthy from Slaves, absolutely.
Makes total sense.
But
this angle, what the fuck? There's never any fucking thought in the construction of this two-part episode as to what makes even a lick of fucking sense.
This is the season finale. The whole episode.
Season finale. The entire season's been building to this point.
Yeah.
And these two fucking hours of television make zero fucking sense.
And it makes less sense the further you
the more
watch.
They get into it. Yeah, the more they get into it, the less it tracks.
And nothing, as the plot picks up, right? Because in the first, there's almost no plot that happens in the first one, right? There's like one thing two things happen.
Yeah.
In the second
one, it's basically the Modine episode all over again.
There's all kinds of plot. In this, you know, we have an extraction gang going upstate to grab Pam Stone, yep. And they yep. leave bodies.
No, they drop a lot of bodies. There are like fucking, I swear I counted at least 4 dead people.
Why did they drop bodies?
No idea. And the doctor's like, oh, they're so professional. They were polite. If they were professional, they wouldn't have dropped any goddamn bodies.
He said that they were polite and professional, and they took their phones. If they did those things, why didn't they just disarm the guards? Why did they need to murder them? They were fucking rent-a-cops. Who needs to murder rent-a-cops?
Yeah, yeah.
Rent-a-cops. I hate rent-a-cops, too.
Yeah, the doctor didn't even give a shit about the dead bodies that he was standing right next to.
He's seen it before, I guess.
I guess. what was she in for? I guess I missed that part of Stone's backstory.
She's just institutionalized.
Okay. Just randomly. Yeah.
There's an episode earlier in the season. It doesn't fucking matter. We'll get there eventually. Nothing. Don't expect season 19 to make sense. I think that's the lesson. Here. All right. Yeah. So if Miguel is the guy, he is like the smooth talkingest motherfucker ever. Like the one sketchy bit about him from the first episode, very reasonably explained with the apartment having been, it was painted.
Which
then they get him on the stand,
yeah.
And fucking
he's nails.
Rojas says basically that because he's a dreamer and lied about work, that he's a rapist. That's the insinuation.
But he's not actually a dreamer, right? They kind of like talked about it, but then they go back and Lourdes is pissed off at him for being a dreamer.
No, he is technically a dreamer.
Oh, he is. Okay. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Because he was brought over by his parents when he was 2.
Okay.
My question here is, if they've got a Latino lawyer mm-hmm. accusing a dreamer of fundamentally being a liar and a lawbreaker,
yeah.
It can't be racist, right?
Well, I think that's probably the discussion they have. They said, it'd be racist if any of the lawyers we normally have call Aceveda.
Yeah. fucking hell.
We know what he'll do on screen.
Okay, all right. He'll do anything, and we can play it over and over and over and over and over and over and over. So Liv keeps insisting that Miguel's the guy, but if he is, then maybe she should be doing the fucking police work to prove it.
Yeah.
We haven't seen them dig into his past at all.
Eventually they do a little digging. I mean, well, like
not really.
Finn and Carisi do off screen, but that's about it, I think.
But this is just her taking Lourdes's word for everything mm-hmm. and then resting on her laurels, thinking everyone should just get in line and trust her instincts.
I think that's how the justice system works, right?
Yeah. Yeah, at least in Chernuchin's world, because Chernuchin is absolutely allergic to showing Liv do the actual police work to make a case.
Uh-huh.
This is...
And she's a lieutenant at this point. She doesn't have to do any police work to make a case. Let the other ones
But
do
no
it.
One else is doing it either. And then we get the goddamn scene of the bar that, as you said, made zero sense ever. Mm-hmm. And she's like, I've heard the lecture before. And Stone's like... Maybe then you should listen. Mm-hmm. And yeah, she should. And then maybe you should listen. What the fuck? this is so frustrating. And it's even more frustrating because we've seen her be able to build a case for the better part of 18 years.
Uh-huh.
Then Chernuchin comes in and it seems she's lost her ability to think clearly about anything.
Yeah, I mean, she's like rambling around screaming at people. That's what being a cop is now.
Drunkenly, clearly.
I mean, that's what it seemed like. And like the way she's knocking back that Vino Rojo, it seemed...
And like the way she was holding the glass, like...
Yeah. To be fair, if I were an actor on that set, I would have needed to have had a couple rounds before I read those lines. So
sure. Understandable. Then from outer space, we get the dumb Diaz brother telling Stone to essentially hand over Lourdes.
Yeah, and that he's going to murder his family if she doesn't. Yeah.
Like a goddamn UFO just swoops in and like completely takes over the show. Uh-huh. Because to this point, we have nothing really, aside from the lawyer showing up early and the nice pad that still doesn't make any sense, but whatever. This is like the first time the fucking cartel comes in, and then we're instantly turn it up to fucking 11. Uh-huh. You know,
well, and it's not clear which case he's trying to get them to drop. So
no, he says his brother Jorge.
Yeah, no, but Jorge's dead.
I know, but he says he's in town for Jorge's funeral. He wants Lourdes. He wants the case against Lourdes to be dropped so that she gets deported. Yep.
Sure. I mean, it's a strange... I mean, if they're the fucking cartel, can't they just kill her when she's in prison? I mean, isn't that what they do?
I think he wants to personally kill her, but...
Yeah.
And, like, this cartel dipshit really misplays his hand. Mm-hmm. Like, Stone turns around and deals with Liv, you know, like, basically treats her, you know, like she's a hostile witness, because she is. Mm-hmm. And the stupid thing here is that they've stopped doing police work entirely.
I feel bad for Stone. I feel bad for him. Because he's, like, the only one who's sort of remotely doing his job properly.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think Carisi and Finn are to a certain extent, but they're following their boss's lead, and she has zero interest in doing anything. I mean,
Rollins is giving, like, unsolicited legal advice to somebody who has a lawyer sitting in the room, which kind of doesn't make sense.
Nope.
And he's just like, sure, whatever, do it, I don't care.
Like, I mean, instead of doing instead of us seeing them do actual police work, they just go back to the tape that they've already, you know, they shot this footage, so they don't need to do anything here. Mm-hmm. They're going back to the tape from the room and getting circumstantial shit, him saying he burned her with cigars.
And all the actors
but, like, they're are, not doing the work to create the, like, connection. It's fucking insane. And while they're not doing police work, Stone's sister gets kidnapped. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and she dies as a result of it.
Mm-hmm. Now, I do love how batshit Miguel's rationale for saying he's a good guy is, and then he follows that up immediately by saying that that he was able to rape them because he was able to rape them all because he was their god for 1,000 miles.
Yeah.
And you're like, how does that make sense?
Yeah, how does this make... He went to college, Josh. He has a skill. Mm. How does any...
Well, as you said, he went to a basketball diploma factory. But and then Benson's like, "Hey, I've been doing shitty police work all episode. Let me talk to him."
Nope.
It's like, oh god damn it!
I love that they open the door, and like them opening the door for him to leave is like, no, now I'm going to confess to all of these crimes in multiple jurisdictions. I'm going to confess to murdering people and multiple rapes. Yeah.
You know what doesn't exist in this episode? Reasonable character motivation.
No, not for any of them. It's Stone, maybe.
Stone, yeah, sure.
But again, maybe.
Even then, I think if we thought about it more, that probably doesn't make any sense either. Because if it did, it's entirely by accident.
Uh-huh. I'm trying to think of any of these side characters and if what they're doing makes sense. I mean, Olivet is.
No, because Pam, no.
Yeah.
No, Pam, Diego, and then
it's like Pam, it's like all you got to do, Pam, is just stand there. Don't run. Mm-hmm. Don't run when you see Stone. And
and it's like, okay, Diego just fucking guns her down. And it's like,
what do you think is going to happen?
He's the dumbest cartel guy ever.
What do you think is going to happen?
Did he really think he's going to get out of that? All right. So then they give us. I even have questions about the cards, because then out of nowhere, like for the first time in half an hour, mm-hmm. they give us a card, and it's Office of Lieutenant Benson. It's like, wait, so do you really think that none of the audience, and it doesn't feel like there's like a discernibly long amount of time that they're having to advance a story here.
Yeah.
So do you really think that anyone watching this episode doesn't know that's Benson's office?
And also, yeah, it's like, is anybody really paying attention to the passage of time in this
yeah.
psychedelic nonsense plot of an episode?
Sure, sure. And let's just say that, let's say for the sake of argument, that they were 4 seconds short and just needed that time, just needed the time that a card gave them. They couldn't have done a different one.
I mean, we've seen them do a musical outro with Ludacris, you know, like staring into the horizon. They could have easily yeah. done that with Stone, like kneeling
over
his dead
sister.
It's a
season finale. Use all that money, you mm-hmm. know? And then, like, the fucking federal trafficking case that Lourdes is supposedly going to testify in mm-hmm. is a complete afterthought to the episode. Miguel gave them everybody, mm-hmm. but that's, like, the quickest, most cast-aside case of like gigantic proportions in the fucking history of this series.
Well, and we're talking about an organization that, if they're a big time Mexican cartel, they have mm-hmm. their fingers going from, you know, from yep. South America to Europe to North America to Asia. They have fingers in all kinds of different pots. The reason the Mexican cartels have been such a central part of the drug trade is because that the distribution networks are really important in how this fucking operation works. And the distribution network allows them to easily transition into other industries. So if cocaine is no longer big, then you can switch to nannies at a moment's notice and still be making
yeah,
that
and
bank.
This is obviously the Mexican nanny cartel that we're dealing with here.
But still, that we're led to believe that they can strike anywhere at any time and they can get anybody's family members. And like, it's like a snap of a finger. We're talking about a day or two, and the entire operation across the continent is rolled up and no longer exists. Because that's how, you know, if you read a story of El Chapo Guzman, like, that's how easy it was to roll up the Sinaloa cartel, which doesn't exist, even though he's in prison at all in any form or fashion, to my knowledge. Yeah.
I've just got a couple questions here.
Sure, please.
First, is anything earned in Chernuchin's SVU?
Yeah, I mean, I just don't understand how... I feel bad for everybody involved in the production of this,
yeah.
right?
You know who I feel worse for? Julie Martin. Yeah, but she was a writer on the show before him.
Yeah.
You know, she I mean, she's essentially like the... You know, she's Warren Light's right hand
yeah.
at this point. And like today, you know, and why the fuck weren't the reins just handed over to her?
Yeah.
And I mean, there's an obvious answer to that question. Chernuchin's a, you know, a fucking less talented male.
Well, and a Dick Wolf bro, most likely.
But Julie Martin's been in I think she started in season 13. I might be wrong, mm-hmm. but she's been on the series for a long fucking time.
Mm.
And it just doesn't make any goddamn sense why she wouldn't have just been handed the reins. Maybe she didn't want him, I guess, because being a showrunner would fucking suck, but...
I mean, maybe,
there's no way she doesn't understand the characters better than Chunurchin, who clearly doesn't understand them at all.
I mean...
And doesn't understand how to fucking tell a story at this point, because nothing he does makes sense. We've watched... This is, what, at least the third Chernuchin penned episode that we've watched, and none of them have made
is
a
it only
lick
three?
Of sense.
I mean, we watched the one Gone Fishing,
and
the two-parter. Well, and the other two-parter from season 19.
But I don't know that he actually wrote any of those.
Okay, well, like, it feels like he wrote the dialogue that involved Brooke Shields because it had the same yeah. psychedelic quality. Yeah, it's just madness. It's madness that you could go to NBC with these episodes and be like, yeah, this is the show. This is like one of your premier primetime shows. This is yep. one that you're paying the star actress $500,000 an episode. This is the one that's getting us Emmy nominations. It's shocking. Well,
it's
not in season 19, but...
It's been a long time since that was happening. Yeah. I think the last time she was nominated was like season 13 or so, but...
Still. It's a prestige... Yeah. you know, product of NBC.
It's at least a fucking, you know, an institution at the network, mm-hmm. you know. It just, God damn it.
Yeah.
It's so bad.
It's something, man. It is really something. So should we rank this one and call it a night, Josh? Yeah. We're about an hour in. So, of course, we rank these episodes, and we have four criteria upon which we judge. We are trying to fit all of these episodes into the greater canon of SVUs. And last week's first part of this episode did not score very well on our scale. It got a 1.5. And so I'm interested to see how this one's going to rank up, because I think, paradoxically, we don't have that much room at the low end of the scale. And
for this to grade out worse?
Yeah, but it might. It might.
I think it will.
So obviously quality is a 1. I don't even think there's any discussion there. This is probably the worst mm-hmm. 43 minutes of television that I've ever watched. And,
it's way up there.
I mean, I watched that Cassidy episode.
That was season 19 also.
Yeah, that was. Wow. So there's been some rough ones.
A lot of stinkers in season 19.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we haven't even gotten to Barbara's exit yet. Because that's
season 19?
Offensive. Yes.
Wow. So the guests now we have, obviously Olivet is in it and she's fine in a very brief role.
I think we can go a 1 here.
You think we can go 1 here? You don't want to give, Benito Martinez a 2?
I don't think he's doing the work.
No, he's like, really
I don't, I mean, it's not like he's bad or anything, but he's not doing, like, the first one relied a lot more on the guest stars. This one doesn't.
This one really doesn't. I mean, what this one does.
This one's living Stone butting heads and mm-hmm. is like, that's not interesting at all. And Stone's right the entire fucking time.
He is.
Like, but whatever, that's not.
But Genesis Rodriguez, all she does is like. She cries on the stand and just makes us relive the horror of the first half of this. So, yeah, I'm fine with a 1. Yeah. It was not good. Was it problematic?
There's not even fun problematic in this one.
I don't think there is there? There's not even anything that's fun. And so
we don't get foot massages via dick in this episode.
No, we don't. No, so that leaves the last category, which is the depth and breadth of Lives Ruined, to get this above the rock bottom. And this one, like, bodies drop. No,
Pamela drops. This is where I think this probably has to be like a 4. Because there are a lot of innocent people who die in this episode.
But Josh, these are innocent people that don't even exist to their coworkers. So is it really matter? You know?
No, but Pamela does.
Oh, yeah.
There's an episode that's built around Pamela.
Yeah.
So I know that this matters. And that's unfortunately the one thing that brings us up to.
And at this point, I mean, Stone is main cast, right? So
yes, yes.
So, yeah. And
so I think it has to be a 4. It's still not going to bring it up much.
They did not really sell the
1.75, I think,
of a family member. Yeah, it's 1.75. So that's that puts it as I think as yes, tied for third worst with some other fun ones. We had Gone Fishing from season 19. And
of course,
wouldn't you know, Gone Baby Gone, also from season 19. So
of course,
so those were covered in respectively. I think we can assume Cassidy is so dumb that he tries to golf at a disc golf course, and the cold mom off gets hot. And yeah, I mean,
season 19 is clearly awful.
I guess what this one lacked in the joyous Finn trip to Cuba, it definitely makes up for in the psychedelic rants of Olivia Benson at a bar. It's not good, man. It's not good. Also, that one had Peter Jacobson in a fun turn. We gave him a 3 for guests. Okay, yeah. So, okay. Okay, okay, okay. So it is what it is, and I am...
And it is terrible.
I am happy that we're kind of like banking some of these season 19 episodes, because, I mean, we've got like... And Chasing Demons is just above that. Chasing Demons got a 2. That was the one with... that was Winters is Coming, which is...
great
obviously time. A Dean Winters-focused episode that was not good in any way, shape, or form. So, yeah, should we just... Roll it and get to the next one, please.
Yes. And let's cleanse our palates of...
God help us that it is not a Chernuchin one.
If there were one, we all know that's not... There is none. Not we all. Sorry, I shouldn't speak for you listeners, but Adam and I sure as fuck know there isn't one. Anyway, so going over to episode.lol, which was built specifically for this podcast by friend of the pod, Flett.
Thanks, Flett. I love it. I use it when I watch other random shows, when I have access to the entire catalog. So not Diagnosis Murder, but lots of other ones.
Columbo.
Yeah, Columbo, sure.
Rockford.
It's a great way to watch Rockford. It's an excellent way to watch Law & Order CI, which I occasionally like to watch.
I just put Peacock on and let it ride at night, usually, because it doesn't stop, and I need something to be playing all night. Otherwise, when I wake up, I'll go insane. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so, episode.lol. Thank you, Flett. I am clicking the pick a random episode button.
Please don't be season 19. Please don't be season 19.
Yep. Bill and Ted are hurtling through space into a new, hopefully better episode. And we have got ourselves episode 13 from season 5 called Hate. After a man accused of the murders of three Arabs claims that he was genetically and biologically predisposed to hatred and violence, Benson and Stabler dispel the fallacy of his defense when they uncover the real impetus to the slayings. Looking down the line of the guest stars, I'm really only seeing Barry Bostwick as a recognizable one. And Linda Amond from Lodge 49, which Lodge 49 is fucking awesome.
Yeah.
So season 5, we're at least back in that sweet spot of, you know, the Neil Barry years, where even if it's a bad episode, it's at least going to have some fucked up shit in it.
Yeah, it'll be fun. Barry Bostwick, man, what a look.
I'm guessing he's a defense attorney in this, but it sure seems like he would be. Or maybe he's the former mayor of New York, who knows. As always, follow us on all the socials. We've also got a subreddit. Everything we're on is as Munch My Benson. We do not have a TikTok, we do not have a Snapchat,
but we don't really need one
and all the other bullshit. There's what purpose would it, I mean, maybe I'll sign up for a TikTok just so it's blocked out, but I can't fathom putting any fucking content on there because I don't know what we would do.
If I had the bandwidth to like edit little clips of the funniest things from these episodes, I could see a point in doing a TikTok.
Like the bandwidth in your life.
In my life, but I barely had time to watch this fucking episode.
And trust me, getting Adam to record these isn't always the easiest. Make sure to head out to your podcast apps and rate and review the podcast.
Please. You have no idea
specifically
how much that
on Apple Podcasts. It really, really helps. So fucking do that. We had to suffer through, we generally watch these episodes twice. So we have to, if it's a bad one, we really had to suffer for our,
these twice. I
fell asleep right before Rollins on my second watch. I fell asleep right before Rollins, started like talking her into testifying against the fucking cartoon.
Trying to remember what the plot was going on is it's a fool's errand, Josh.
Yeah, no point. Anyway, rate and review the podcast. Please do that.
Please.
You could also go over to Good Pods and rate individual episodes, I believe.
Oh, that's cool.
So if you're on Good Pods, do that too. And then Podchaser, you can rate individual episodes and the podcast. Make sure to rate the podcast. Fucking A. And yeah, you know, but lunch the fuck out of our Bensons.
If you're a true fan, listen to us and rate us on Apple or whatever else. But then go listen to us on Spotify so we get your demographic data, because Spotify shares that with us.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
So we want to know how many fans in Mauritius are listening to us.
Yeah, and we don't have ads on anything, no. So I don't think if you listen to us on Spotify, because...
We've made an informed choice to not monetize this in any way, at least for the time being. Yeah, at least for the time being. Yeah.
So you don't have anything to worry about. We're toying with things, I think, but we haven't figured out a way that we could make this and keep it legal. Yeah. Make money off this and keep it legal. Yeah. So,
And
I'll leave that there.
On that note, guys, I think it's time to start munching.
Yeah. You know what? Munch everyone's Benson.
Please.
Munch your friend's Benson.
Munch that guy in the subway who's massaging women's feet with his erect penis.
Yep. Munch the subway penile massager's Benson. Yeah. Munch everyone's Benson.
But only on the sea, not on the air, the E, or any of the other.
No.
Delightful lines in this
only
town.
On the sea. Only munch that Benson on the sea.
All right.
That's lewd as fuck.
I went to college. I have a skill.